Welcome, welcome. So glad you're with us tonight. This is Bill Arnold, along with George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. We're off to the races with another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. How are you tonight, George?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. George, you're not God. You're not in control. So what's your opening statement?
I agree with that.
Yeah. We're going to talk about narcissism tonight. We've got Todd Mullican in studio tonight. He's going to talk about narcissism and how it affects people in addiction and the people who are also codependent. So this is going to be a fascinating hour.
Well, you know, I went into chemical dependency, counseling to help solve my own drinking problem. So it's going to be interesting to hear Todd's story because we always, look at helping people. And I'm probably a bit of a narcissist, Bill. And so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm in remission.
Yeah. Well, George, I'm not saying I'm better than you, but I am thinking it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about delusion tonight?
No, we're not. We're talking about narcissism.
Narcissism. I bet we all have it. I mean, if all our sin is based on idolatry, putting ourselves above God, there's got to be a little peace in here. I think this is going to be a fascinating hour.
Well, we'll just wait and see what
might
happens.
Might get a little close to home, though, huh?
Yeah, it could. It could. I want to have a couple of scriptures to get tonight started, because I always think that's a good way to start. I'm going to look, first of all, George, at James 4, chapter 6. It says, but he gives us more grace. That is why Scripture says God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. All right. Matthew 23:12 says, for whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And then I'm going to reach into the Old Testament, into Obadiah. When was the last time you quoted Obadiah?
A couple days ago.
When was the last time you didn't
tell
the truth?
That's a Beatles song, wasn't it?
Obadiah?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. All right, the pride of your heart has deceived you, you who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your home on the heights. You who say to yourself, who can bring me down to the ground? Yes, and we hear that quite often with people in addiction because they have a sense of self-aggrandizement, and they have a sense of entitlement. And an inflated sense of self-importance.
That's very difficult to say what you just said.
Yes, and I'm looking right at you.
And here's the deal. We hear guys say that when they say, hey, I got this. I don't need to do that anymore. You know, what are you not willing to do because you don't feel you have to do it? And I don't know the address on the scripture, Bill, but pride comes before the fall. Let every man take heed lest he stumble. And I know in my life, we were talking before the show, the shortcomings that have come for me when I thought I would never do that. That's not something I need to worry about. As a recovery guy, I don't say I'll never drink again, I'll never do coke again, because I have today. And Jesus said, in Matthew 6:34, do not worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own. So let's stay in the moment and be humble.
Yes.
Be humble.
Yes. Now, George, we always like on the show, on Real Recovery, to talk about one of the 12 steps, and how it applies biblically, and how it applies to people that need to know of them in recovery. So we're going to talk about step three tonight.
Yeah, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. Now let's go back to the Oxford group. Where we understand God was not a God we created. It was how far along we were in our walk with Jesus Christ. A lot of people come into their relationship with God and their recovery to solve a problem. I drank too much. I gambled too much. I might have a porn or sex problem, too, and once that's solved, then I'm okay. And what this step is telling us is, no, that's a symptom. That's a symptom of the problem. The problem is your selfishness and your wanting to make your own decisions when God is the one who makes your decisions. So what we're doing in this step, and our problem brings it to us, is we are totally dependent on God. God is sovereign. My next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God. My whole life is God. My money, it's God's money.
Mm-hmm.
God's house, God's car, our body is the temple, that kind of stuff. And that's what we want to get into.
Yeah. Can I borrow $5,000 of God's money?
He told me no just now. He said, tell Bill no, George.
Really? He connected me to you that fast?
Yes. That's, constant contact over here. You know that.
That's interesting. That is very interesting. Okay. I want to hear step
three. If it was foreclosed, I'll do it.
Yeah. I want to hear step three one more time, and then I'm going to stop you. Go ahead. Say it one more time.
We made a decision.
Stop. We made a decision. That's key to that, isn't it? Key to that step.
Yes. And we don't just
think about it. You can talk about it, but then there's making a decision, and that's the big part of the step, right?
Well, it's an action step.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, in the 12 steps, the third step prayer that you pray doesn't have an amen after it. That comes after the seventh step prayer. Because what we're going to do now in turning our life over is we're going to take our inventory, we're going to confess our sins, and we're going to look at our defects, our shortcomings, and give those to God and move on. This isn't a I vote for Jesus and we're done, Bill. This is I'm going to pick up my cross and deny myself all the time and turn it over to God. Be very careful before you make this step because it's a tall order. Who can do it? And half measures avail us nothing. We got to be all the way in on this. And it's funny, we're all the way in on our addiction, but in our recovery, in our walk, I'll do this, but I won't do that.
Mm-hmm. I find that a lot of people don't think God can be trusted or that God is going to be good. And that's why they're reluctant to go all in.
That's a good point.
They don't want to lose their fun, and they can't imagine life without using.
How do you encourage people to take that leap?
In the big picture, I say it's probably not going to feel good today, and it may not feel good tomorrow. But you have to look at the big picture and how God is going to work his way into your life, and it's going to come over days, months, and years.
Do you find resistance to that because we're an instant satisfaction culture?
Entirely, yeah.
I want what I want, and I want it right now. I want a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine being patient.
I can't talk about this subject.
Why not?
Patience?
No.
It's not my strong suit. I like action. And I think a lot of the addicts we work with, that's it. We want to change how we feel. We want to do it right now. And I want to do it my way. And it's all about love of self. And tonight I think we're going to be talking more about love of God.
Yeah, we are going to be talking about love of God. And in a narcissistic personality, and if you're living with someone, you're probably the one that is most interested in tonight's show. Because you're probably the one suffering the most. Fair enough, George?
So do we get the other person out of the bathroom and from in front of the mirror and sit them by the radio tonight too? Or?
No, but, you know, narcissists, they have this sense of self-importance, and they have this self-aggrandizement. And, of course, I used that word twice now in the last 10 minutes, so it almost sounds as if I know what I'm talking about. But they're so full of themselves, and they think that they can do whatever they want, whenever they want, and they're entitled to all of this. And usually, if that's the case, they want to be using, you know, drugs and chemicals as well, because it's all about their pleasure and their satisfaction.
Yes, it's all about me. How's this going to affect me? What's in this for me? And that's tough to break, and I got to confess a little bit. A lot of times for me, I think about what am I going to get out of this too? I think we are wired, and when he comes on, I want to ask him this question. I think even our good works, Paul talks about our filthy rags, but even when we do good things for Christ, we get something out of that, and I'm not sure that's necessarily bad. I think we're made, and that's that way, and it's a positive reward. I kind of need some clarification on that, Bill, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, George, some of the characteristics that I understand about codependency, and our guest will clarify this as well when we bring him on, time permitting. You know, we might.
Yeah, this is so interesting. Why would we even bring him on?
That's my whole point, George.
Thank you.
We are on such a roll right now.
Yeah.
You know, codependency characteristics include feeling controlled by others, taking on others' feelings, worrying about confronting and sharing your own feelings, and desiring to please others to avoid problems. That sound pretty familiar?
Sounds like somebody I'd like to date. You know, I have never been able to get my arms around the fact that I'm not happy unless somebody else is okay. I
mm-hmm.
guess I didn't get that one. Now,
really?
In seriousness, what happened one time, I had a family member who had a tragedy happen to them, and I realized then how important that person was to me and that I couldn't protect them, and maybe that's a little bit, and when Todd comes on, we'll talk about that. Maybe that is a little codependent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's possible to not be a little codependent with people you love. But
yeah. Well, our guest tonight in studio, Todd Mullican, he's the owner of Mullican Counseling Services, ToddMullican.com.
You got the name in there a lot, Mullican, Mullican, Mullican. It's good branding.
Yeah.
Now we need to scale this business.
You can pipe down, George.
Okay.
He's written three books. One is called The State of Affairs, Affairs and Why They Happen. Another book is called All the Best of Couples, and another one is All the Best for Parents. He's working on a new book called The Dance of Narcissism and Codependency. So he's just the man to talk about this subject tonight. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, what's your initial reaction to this babble that George and I just
You guys are great.
No, we're not looking for a compliment. I'm just looking for how accurate we are with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's great to hear you talk about it because it's a common theme. In fact, we almost didn't put narcissistic personality disorder in the new DSM because too many people have it now.
Is that right?
Yeah, they almost didn't throw it in there as a personality disorder this year.
Wow.
So a lot of what I see is most family systems have one person that's more controlling, that's vulnerable to narcissism, and another person is that more of that codependent pleaser type. So it's a lot of the dance I see with most couples and families I work with.
What would you define a narcissist personality as containing? What
yeah,
makes
there's
it up?
You know, there's 9 symptoms. You have to have at least 5 of them. But usually,
I've heard that. Yeah,
yeah, you usually have 4.
You've got 14 of them, George.
Usually, if you have 3 or 4, you have 8 or 9. You know, but all of us could have a narcissistic trait. So when I teach on narcissism, I talk about that a lot. Like most people might have a narcissistic trait, but it doesn't mean they're a narcissist. So true narcissists, it is about grandiosity. It is about a need to be right, a need to win every argument.
Okay, 2 for 2.
They don't make requests, they make demands. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And it is, they kind of believe they're a big deal, and nobody else is. You know, that third symptom is they believe they're special and unique. The fifth one, which keeps me in business over the holidays, is they expect automatic compliance to their demands. So most young couples that I work with end up spending most of their holidays with the parent that they're most concerned about hurting their feelings if they don't come. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening in those systems is a lot of narcissism is carrying the day, and the codependents are afraid to say what's really on their mind.
Wow.
And there's other symptoms like a lack of empathy. Get ready for this one. Number 8 has 2 pieces to it. One piece is... They're jealous of others, and we're all like that. But ready for the second part?
Mm-hmm.
The second part is they think others are jealous of them. So, and then the 9th symptom is they're arrogant.
That's bad.
Body.
That one's bad. Okay.
And the big one, as you mentioned earlier, I think is this an unwillingness and a lack of empathy. That's the hardest one to treat. So it's very rare that a narcissist comes in and says, "Hey, I think I have an issue." It's usually the codependents that are in the counseling going, how do I deal with this? How do I live with this? How do I trust God with this part of my story? And how do I confront this person? Because I always say if you avoid the mess, you carry the mess. So
if you avoid the mess, you carry the mess.
Right. So codependents end up carrying the mess a lot. And so.
Well, I'm completely indifferent to George's pain and suffering. But based on that, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have lots more with Todd Mulliken tonight. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about narcissism and how it affects relationships and addictions. Thanks for being with us on Real Recovery. You're listening to My Faith Radio. Okay, we are back. We're back into talking about narcissism tonight and how it affects relationships, codependency, and addiction. And George, we have Todd Mulliken here in studio tonight, and he's writing a new book on the dance of narcissism and codependency, and he is quite an expert on the subject.
What did you total up on your score out of the 9? Because I see you writing over there.
No, I was writing, but I got to do the math and stuff,
okay.
So it's going to take a while. Carry the 1, divide by 2, you know, it'll take a while.
Okay. Well, for me, I came up, how many do you need? 5?
I'm
1 short. Well, a couple are debatable. You know, it's really interesting subject, guys, because we work with a lot of people, Bill, that are so self-absorbed that the whole world revolves around them, and when you're addicted, that's it. And how do we address that? It's a tough one.
Great question, Todd. You
sometimes
up for that?
Well, with the narcissism piece, sometimes it's helpful to look at the root, right? And so when you and I, you know, we learn in Colossians to go back to that time when we loved Christ the most, when we came to Christ, be rooted in Christ like you were when we first started. And you find with people when they, sometimes narcissism is due to a lack of attachment and abandonment growing up. So it's not a blame parent thing, but the truth is some narcissistic people grew up in a lot of abandonment, a lot of shame. And now they're compensating for that now by bullying and making sure they're not, you know, involved with that. Then on the other end, are people that grew up with the entitlement, you know, I want what I want when I want it. So I would suggest that not all narcissists just come from the entitlement perspective. A fair amount of narcissists I've dealt with who also are addicts have come from places of deep abandonment, deep shame, and are using the narcissism as a shield, or they're using, you know, the drugs as a shield from their pain, from their deep sense of loss and attachment. So, you know, when they can turn that dependency, of course, over to Jesus and really know that they are loved, accepted, and approved for who they are, it's a new start. It's a fresh beginning. It's not perfect. Paul still said late in the game, what I don't do, I still do. What I don't want to do, I do, kind of thing. You know, so it's not, you know, we're not all set. But it's helpful to know some of the roots with narcissism.
If I'm abandoned and I'm left and I get this delusion that I've got, is that a survival skill that I overcompensate?
Perfectly said.
Okay, so, but then why would they need to come to Christ? I would think that would be a real barrier. I got
everything. Well, they usually don't want to. I mean, usually the truth is, it's rarely, like I said, somebody's in my office saying, hey, I think I'm a narcissist, I'd like to get some help. You know, usually that's not what you see. Usually you see the family members in there going, how do I deal with this person? How do we confront this person? How do I show God's love to this person? I know the truth of their story was they were abandoned. So they think by kind of being nice and being kind and showing the grace of Christ, the grace of Christ, the grace of Christ, then that person will actually change, and they really don't. They just get more and more entitled, more and more controlling. So I always talk about having honest conversations. Romans 12:9 doesn't say love must be codependent. It says love must be sincere. So we have to work with those codependents on being sincere, being honest in the moment. And when they start confronting their narcissistic partner or spouse, then that's the only time you ever see somebody even be open to changing. Maybe a little bit open to that step one, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Now, would it be fair that a codependent person and a narcissist are kind of going to fill in each other's gaps? I mean, isn't there an attraction there?
Yeah, you know, opposites attract and then they attack, right? Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, initially there is that. I don't think the codependent says, hey, I can't wait to meet a narcissist today. You know, but I think what they do is they endure a narcissist because they usually grew up with the same kind of toxicity.
Okay.
So they don't necessarily, in my opinion, look for that, but they'll endure it because that's what they're used to, if that makes any sense at all. So that pleaser is used to pleasing, used to helping, and the narcissist has a big hole in there, so they keep taking. I usually say the narcissist's capacity to love is not as great as their need to be loved. So they have a lack of capacity to love well. Their need to be loved, their need to be acknowledged, their need to be admired trumps their capacity to love.
Does the trump capacity, is it because they love themselves too much and they don't have room to love other people?
Yeah, well, I would say that they actually hate themselves, really. Because obviously, if you have, Jesus said, love your neighbor and view yourself as an idiot, you know, love your neighbor as self, you know. So the truth is that you want to have a healthy, when you love self well, then you're confident. Paul was content in Philippi, you know, writing from a prison, not from the Taj Mahal. I've learned to be content in all things.
Okay,
right?
So I want to love myself and think my neighbor's an idiot.
Right, no, you want to be kind to yourself because that's how God views you. God doesn't view you as an idiot, right? So the truth is when you're working with narcissism and codependency, you do want to help them build their dependency on God and their love for God, and then and make sure that they try to view and love self in a way that God loves them, not in some, you know, self-help love thing or some new age thing, but just, you know, not to have hatred. Because when you have self-hatred, then that's usually when you bully others. That's usually the deep root issue for narcissists. They have their grandiose, right? Mm-hmm. And they have entitlement, but deep down, you know, when you really are kind, then you deep dig down, you have self-hatred. But when you're really kind, you don't treat others like that. Narcissists bully because they were usually bullied.
That's right. Very interesting.
Yeah, it really is. So for people who might be listening, thinking, I still don't know if I have my arms around the narcissistic personality, is there a little snapshot you can give which would be a indicator of what a narcissist might look like on the surface?
So in the home, he or she is winning every fight.
Okay.
They have to be right. They have to win.
Okay.
They are kind of even, they're bullying. You know, they're spiritualizing things in a way that I'm right, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, sweetheart, I love you. Here's how I see it. This is what, you know, but how do you see it?
Mm-hmm.
They're not open to dialogue.
Yeah.
They're open to this is my way.
Yeah.
Even if they you know, have found Christ, they have to be very careful. If I found Christ, and my dependency is on Jesus, right? Now, my dependency isn't on my own view of mm-hmm. things now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the way they look in family systems is they think they're kind of a big deal.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say their need to be right trumps everything else, if that makes sense. So their spouse, their kids say, why would I even talk to dad or mom? It won't matter anyway.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, and this might be part of narcissism, or it might just be part of a boring person. But what about people that listen autobiographically, that you might come and share a feeling with them, and then they instantly make it about them?
Yeah.
They have a complete inability to just go, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know?
You said it so well. It's that lack of empathy, that seventh symptom. There's a lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
They one up. They make it all about themselves.
They do, but they often will say, I'm trying to relate to them. I'm trying to show them that I went through that too.
Yes.
And, right. and to them, they're being the great person.
Yes.
The sympathetic person. And I look at that and I go, you're boring me, man. It's boring.
Yeah. They just kind of bring it back themselves. And again, we usually look at the root. And the root is usually they grew up with a very dominant parent that shamed them all the time. Now they just can't get enough of talking about themselves.
Yeah.
Or it's the other end. Like, for example, our oldest daughter didn't make senior choir or didn't make concert choir 1 year at Edina. Oh, well. So she didn't make it. That was
yeah.
too bad. And she
yeah.
felt bad. You know, we felt bad for her. But we had people call us and say, well, why don't you call that choir master? She deserves to make it.
Yeah.
Well, why would I do that?
Yeah.
I mean, so there is, if I would parent our girls in a way they're always entitling, it's always the coach's fault, it's always the pastor's fault, it's always the teacher's fault,
mm-hmm.
then we have that entitlement type of narcissism.
Mm-hmm. So if I said to you, I had kind of a rough day, I was in a car accident, and you responded with, well, I remember when I was in a car accident.
Right.
I mean, does that suggest that you might be narcissistic, or does that suggest you just might be a boring person?
I would say narcissistic.
Okay,
a boring person would have a flat affect and, you know,
okay.
nobody's home
okay.
kind of thing.
And,
right?
And an empathetic person would say, oh, I'm so sorry. Did you get hurt? Is everything okay?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Because I experienced that quite a bit. Especially at dinner after the show.
I had a friend one time who gave a great motivational talk, and then afterwards in the parking lot, he backed into a pole in front of half the audience. I won't mention any names. But, you know, I felt very empathetic after I stopped laughing. No, you know, you're right, Bill. There is a point when we work with people that are addicts and we listen to their story and you try to relate to it, and it's real easy to go, yeah, that happened to me. And then the next thing you know, you're kind of talking about yourself.
Yeah.
Well, it's, as you guys know, it's great to say, yeah, that happened to me too, but tell me more about what happened to you. You know,
right.
Are we dialoguing? Are we really coming from a place of true empathy, of the grace of Jesus? You know, are we coming back with promoting grace?
I like that always getting back to Jesus. That's the solution on this.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. A lot of us have narcissistic characteristics, don't we?
I think so.
Thanks for the grace on that, though. That was, if you had said no, I was hanging.
And I would suggest, you know, you talked about addiction, you know, I don't think all narcissists are addicts, but I think all addicts have narcissism. Like the second trait of narcissism is a preoccupation with fantasies of brilliance, power, and ideal love. And so when I see folks that are in an affair,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they feel like they found their ideal love,
mm-hmm.
and they're in this place of narcissism, and they just kind of end up on their own island, and everybody gets hurt. You know, so I got to put it in the Big Ten.
What were those three?
They're preoccupied with fantasies of brilliance, power, and ideal love.
Sounds like a cocaine use trip. It's a total fantasy. Do you see a lot of cocaine addicts that are narcissists?
I don't work with a lot of cocaine addicts, but the addicts that I have worked with, the more of the addictions I see will be alcohol as well as sex addicts. But in that same spirit, you see a lot of that where there's a grandiosity, there's that entitlement, there's that lack of empathy, and that is that they're just preoccupied with the next fix.
Is it oftentimes, Todd, that they want a feeling of superiority without necessarily having achieved anything of superiority?
That's the first one.
Is it?
They expect to be acknowledged for things greater than what they do.
Okay.
It's the guy you go golfing with that shot a 95 and he said he got an 82. He does that every time you go.
Uh-huh.
They expect to be acknowledged for things greater than they actually have done. That's the first step.
95, you didn't have to bring that up. But yeah.
Wasn't that what you shot yesterday?
I did.
Was it 94 or 95?
94.
What did you write on the scorecard?
94.
Well, good for you. See, yeah. There is hope for you, George. Yeah. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold and George Fraser and Alex on the board. We're talking to Todd Mullican tonight. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, lots more with Todd. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you've joined us tonight, 5:32 on quite a lovely Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. We're talking to Todd Mullican tonight, and Todd is really quite the expert on narcissism. And narcissism, as it in our conversation tonight, as it relates to addiction, and then Todd was saying the narcissist can just pretty much run people over every day and not even being aware of the fact that they're a narcissist, and then people are left in pain. And what they really need to do is start figuring out ways to have proper boundaries with the addict slash narcissist in their home. And that's one of the hardest things to do because they feel called to be this great Christian in this marriage or in this relationship. And they're just dying, aren't they?
Yeah. They think if I can just love them well enough, then maybe things will change because I know what their story is. I know where they came from. Everybody views him or her as really selfish, but I know their heart is really good versus just trying to be what I call contextually honest. Again, going back to that love must be sincere thing. I usually try to confront the codependent and say, you're not really being honest about how you really feel. Because how'd you really feel right there when he or she just, really just ran you into the ground emotionally? Mm-hmm. Or it's always their way. How do you really, what are you really experiencing there? Well, I'm supposed to defer to them. And yeah, but you have your voice in Christ, right? Mm-hmm. Speak what you think and what you feel. And once they start to have those honest conversations, they'll always come back the next week and say, that was the worst advice you ever gave me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't go well.
I can see that.
Right?
Because
it causes...
they're trying to avoid conflict.
Right. So it creates more conflict.
Right.
So that was stupid.
Right.
Why did you tell me to do that? I said, well, go back to what you were doing, and you're just going to continue to live in this stress and this pain, and you're actually not even helping your spouse at all, too. So if you want to go with the fact that we're supposed to be carrying each other's burdens, Galatians 6, let's go there.
Mm-hmm.
But really to carry that, you also want to share what you're experiencing and where you're at. So the honest conversations usually eventually lead to some difficulties, but now it's on the table. The codependent is going to have his or her voice, even if it took 15, 20 years in the marriage to find
Ooh.
It. And we're going to start having a voice, and we're going to start having tough conversations. And kingdom life gets messy sometimes. But the opposite of that is the narcissist just continues to be a narcissist, his or her own story, and breathes that into the kids, ready for this. And the kids are in my office in 20 years. Right?
So it's good for business.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say.
Yeah.
So the codependent parent is not really saying what's on their mind.
Right.
And, when the narcissist is demanding stuff out of the kids versus, hey, can we have a dialogue about this? I'm the authority in the home, but mm-hmm. I want to hear what you're thinking. And then that kid ends up, well, I wonder what they're going to do when they're a big person.
Mm.
That makes sense. So it's really important that the codependent has their voice, Oof. Changes the rules, and starts to say, we gotta mix the truth and the grace of Christ in this home and start having some tough conversations.
What's the average length of time a person will be a codependent person before they finally stand up and say, all right, enough, I'm going to actually get my voice that you talk about?
Yeah, well, of course, each case is different, but if they grew up dominated too,
mm-hmm.
if they were the middle child or something and always listened to mom's issues with dad or dad's issues with mom, picked up all that secondhand smoke, so they're ingrained, their identity is in being a pleaser, a listener, mm-hmm. and they really are all over that, and now they're doing that to their spouse, and their spouse is yapping all the time and running everything, and they don't have a voice, and they feel minimized. They feel, alone. They feel unloved.
Angry, maybe?
10 to 20, and then what I always say is that the pleaser builds a little resentment account.
Uh-huh. That grows, doesn't it?
And it grows. And they finally get to the top of Anger Mountain. I called about 20 years in.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I am with George right now. Anger Mountain.
Only took you 4 years.
Took us four. Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking. If somebody comes to you that's codependent and you start having some sessions and you're making progress, and let's just say it's a she, and she goes home, my guess is the other person is going to want to come in and talk to Todd. Does that happen a lot?
Well, you know, a little bit of both, George. Sometimes, for sure, it'll be this person doesn't know what they're talking about, and, you know, they end up being kind of verbally intimidating, which is what narcissistic abuse looks like. It's very intimidating. It's very scary. So sometimes I'll just shut the codependent up. The other times they might come in.
Well, I would think that. And you're a big guy, but you're a direct but gentle guy. You seem very respectful. And I would guess a lot of guys are going to come in and go, hey, you're wrecking my marriage.
Sure.
And is that how a narcissist gets into recovery?
Well, yeah, I mean,
one of the ways.
Well, one of the greatest things that happens is when the narcissist actually gets to step one, where they finally get broken. You know, I had a guy working in my garage a couple years back. I just came to my mind, and he, and unfortunately, I told him what I did for a living, and so he asked me a question. He said, "You know, I got a question for you." I said, "What?" He said, "Well, I've been sober for 15 years." I said, "That's awesome, congrats." Mm-hmm. And he said, "But I'm having issues with my kids." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" He said, "Well, I haven't talked to them for a while." I said, "How long has it been?" And he said, "It's been about 15 years." And I said, "Well, what's wrong?" He said, "Well, they have my number, but they never call." So he's expecting them to pursue them versus, I said, "You know, before you brush your teeth tonight, call every kid. Call, pursue them." So once in a while, when the narcissist gets broken, and maybe they're sniffing a little bit of step one where they realize they are powerless over this addiction or this narcissism, then what's great is just to see that freshness in their mind for the first time. Hey, I've worked with a lot of people who've had multiple affairs and are just like their dad or just like their mom. You know, maybe this is my first chance. Now, here's the problem, though, fellas, is that once they start doing better, the family is in such pain still that they don't want to come around for a while. Does that make sense?
Total sense.
They don't trust dad or mom's change. And then when they don't trust dad or mom's change and they say, I need space, I need time, then that narcissist is very vulnerable, even though they're at step one, even though they've yielded their life to God.
Mm-hmm.
It's still sometimes the shame comes back or the rejection comes back. And they don't want anything to do with it. The seed fell on rocky ground. Yeah. So when the seed falls on really healthy ground, then it's beautiful to watch somebody in recovery grow.
Well, the moment of mental clarity for a lot of us comes with the humility that it's not working. And that can be devastating, but it's also, you know, the most rewarding thing that happens. And that usually comes with a lot of pain, doesn't it?
Right. And they have to just, once they can see, and it's beautiful when they see it, when they see, yeah, I get why my 20-year-old doesn't want to talk to me yet. I haven't called him for 15 years. You know, mm-hmm. I get it. And so when you see those moments of clarity, you know, it's a beautiful thing. Because here's the upside, at least I've seen, with some of these controlling personalities. The upside is they can kind of go from Saul to Paul. Boom. You know, okay, I'm all in. You know, I'm all in. Let's go. So once in a while you do get that type of narcissist or that type of addict who is just broken down, and they say, I'm all in. I really want to get after this. Now, that's more the exception, but it's wonderful when you see that. It's wonderful when you see that.
A lot of what we hear is, it's my program and it's a selfish program. I've never read that in any of the steps. It's about turning it over to God, which we're talking about tonight.
Right.
But, you know, you're affecting my recovery, and it's still me, me, me.
Totally.
Well said.
You know,
yeah, that's always bugged me.
It's the reason I know this.
Yeah,
trust
yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
That's always bugged me, though, George. You know, you talk to these guys, well, I got to work on my recovery. And I go, you just crashed a bus with a lot of people on it, and, you know.
Can I just say this, too?
Yeah, please.
When I do adult education hours at different churches, you know, I remember one, I was speaking on narcissism as a 4-week session, and I went over 9 symptoms, and the guy came up to me after, he says, that's my whole AA group. I said, what do you mean? I love AA. He says, I love it too, because I do. I love AA. And he said, but all those guys in my group are just like what you're saying. And I think it's a little bit of that, where it's kind of my program.
Well, right? I think we can switch addictions. I get addicted instead to a drug to myself and working on me all the time instead of turning it over. And Bill and I have talked about this a lot. Bill sees that very clearly with the guys we work with. Mm-hmm. Because he comes from a Christian recovery background, not an addiction recovery background. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference.
Huge.
Because this is all about Christ. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating because even when we see guys at graduation after 6 months or when they have a dry date of 5 years, they give up and, you know, get an Academy Award presentation of thanking everybody for how great they're doing.
Right.
And so there's a balance there.
Mm-hmm. they have a tendency of looking at their self instead of their Savior.
Mm.
And I think that's part of the problem of too much of one kind of recovery group is that you spend so much time looking inward, and I think you have to look up. I mean, that to me is where you really make progress.
Well, that's one thing you've helped me with a lot, seriously, without a joke there. And say something, Todd, before he makes it a joke, because I'm just laying out here. But it's very true. It's not about stopping a behavior. It's about developing a relationship with God.
And that's why when you see narcissism in the home and somebody is been sober for 15 years or done with their coke for 2 years, how are you actually treating the people closest to you? Let's get in there. Let's see what's really going on. Not how you're at church, but how you are in that home, because that's where the generational patterns came from, and that's the generational pattern you're creating. So if the truth is you're really recovering, and the truth is when Christ is on the throne, then it's going to bring a lot more empathy, a lot more compassion. Okay, the only time Christ really had rage or righteous anger, if you will, was when with who? It was with the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I can tell if a narcissist is really starting to make some changes is the spouse, is the adult children, or the young kids. Really notice that. They're seeing the fruit that's actually being born in the home. Not what they're doing in their groups, even though that's amazing support, but how is it actually transferring into their actual relationships?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can tell if there's a level of authenticity behind it, or integrity, or if it's just, like you said, their own self-program.
Okay, let's say that somebody's listening to tonight that it's not in the studio here, and they're thinking, gosh, this is kind of knocking on my door a little bit. Once again, they're not in the studio here, and they're at home listening or in their car. What could they do to start off? What would be, this is an awareness that's coming through Christian radio. Maybe God's talking to me about this. I've got this. What can I do?
Well, obviously, if they're in a marriage and they are the narcissist, can they go home and have an authentic conversation saying, I've been struck by this, and I think I have been grandiose. I'm reminding myself of my father with how I'm treating you. I'm just really sorry, and I want to get some help for that. Now, we don't hear that a lot, but if that's going on, then acknowledge that to your spouse. If you're the codependent spouse, then acknowledge, hey, I'm really concerned about our marriage. I haven't said anything for 10 years. I want to have a conversation about this, and this means a lot to me. And I want to start setting some boundaries. And then obviously you want to get good, healthy counseling from folks that really have been trained in this area and know what they're doing.
Yeah. Or give George and me a call. We'll figure something out for you.
Well, I was thinking, it's a little late on the marriage, Todd, but thank you. But, let's say I get home tonight, I'm talking to my stuffed chimp that I have, and I'm thinking.
Yes.
He does have a stuffed chimp.
Yeah, he does.
The hockey game's over because I bought
over.
Arnold dinner, and that killed that. What could a person do to start? See, you're right. We do start talking about ourselves.
Yeah, it's always back to you. Yeah. Now it's back to you. This is so boring.
So you check the website out.
Yep.
And maybe, are there groups for this? Is there, your book? Does it address, how do I start day one? How does a person?
Well, obviously I would start by getting some counseling, honestly, just to say, hey, this
you
struck.
You have to get mean about it. Dude.
it struck a chord with me. Or if I have a close believing brother or sister, friend who's just who we pour out our souls to each other every other week. That's a person I want to break bread with tonight and just say, I've been struck by this conversation. Here's a couple of things I took away from this radio show. What do you think? Somebody that we love, who we trust, have that conversation. Because once we start having the conversation and boundaries can change, there's hope for healing. God is still in the miracle working business.
And hopefully not somebody who's codependent, because they're not going to tell us what we need.
They're not going to say what's really on their mind. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
We're going to take a little short break. When we come back, we have one more segment coming up with Todd Mullican. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Be back in a minute. Back to Real Recovery tonight. We're talking to Todd Mullican, and we are having a very interesting conversation about narcissism and how narcissism can ruin relationships and also turn people into miserable addicts.
Well, and I would also think, too, it's going to turn off a lot of people that we could be witnessing to with our faith because we're so abrasive.
Mm-hmm. Arrogant. Yeah. Unearned self-confidence. Wait, I don't want to talk about you anymore. Let's just ask Todd a question.
You're so codependent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyway, you're getting healthier, though. I can see that. So how does it tie in, Todd? Somebody might have some recovery. We have a lot of people who listen to our show that are 10, 15 years, 5 years of recovery, and they're listening and they're going, I got this. I might not have all nine or maybe five to quantify to the criteria that I'm a narcissist, but I have narcissistic characteristics. Where do I go?
Well,
what do I do?
Obviously, if they're saying that, when I start a narcissistic conference, I always say, if you think you're a narcissist, you're not. Okay, so if the truth is somebody is acknowledging they have these traits, that's a huge step. Because they're acknowledging they really have these traits, God's God, and I'm not, and here we go. So, I mean, that's an amazing first step. Then I said, like, right before the break, George, mm-hmm. I think it's really good that they have an accountability person that really can hold their feet to the fire, that loves them well, that confronts them well, that they can start to share this new information with. But I do think long-term therapy is really helpful for folks that are coming out of that type of framework. So they're starting to see that they have the narcissistic traits. They've been dry for years, and they are feeling their feelings, but they're still running, you know, their loved ones over with a truck, or they're still, you know, feeling grandiose, so they still are battling these things, and they recognize it. The first step is just to talk about it and to acknowledge it and to start pursuing, I call it just sound bites of empathy. Just breaking bread with their friends, with people closest to them, and start, I know it sounds a little elementary, but starting the conversation with, you know, tell me what's going on for you. They're starting to breathe out empathy, starting to breathe out day-to-day life of, you know, because every time they do that, then slowly the past stuff is being washed away, you know, through Christ's blood and through the victories this person's having by pursuing empathy slowly each day.
So I'm going to make a plan then to have conscious inventory.
Intentional.
Yeah, that today I'm going to have lunch with somebody and I'm going to talk about them.
Yep, and just tell me about your story and what's going on. You know, and I'm not going to bring it back to me for an hour and a half. You know, I'm going to make sure the conversation is about them. Because now that I know I'm loved and accepted and approved by God, I don't have this need to be talking about myself all the time. God took care of that. We're good. Jesus took care of that. So now I'm loved and accepted and approved. So how are my actions actually showing that through humility, through grace? Or do I still have to win that fight with my spouse? Or do I still have to be right in all my situations? Or can I be confident enough myself to say, here's how I see it. What do you think, honey? So in my opinion, it gets down to the real basics of conversational style, of intentional choices. And that's when, you know, the brokenness is step one, really starts to happen, where the inventory starts to take place, where the amends start to take place. And it gets exciting when they get there, but it takes a long time because it took them a long time to get there.
Yeah. Is there a narcissist prayer?
Oh. You know, the serenity prayer is not a bad one, though.
Yeah.
It's not a bad one because it gets you in touch with that kind of humility that's needed and what I can't control. Because a narcissist need to control, the need to be right trumps everything.
You know, I could start that thing talking tonight when I have dinner with Bill, but I think that's too big a leap to
it's do a big
that.
Step.
Yeah, maybe a couple weeks down the road.
Yeah.
All you guys might have some counseling for the two of you together. With your relationship, maybe there's some issues
That's
here.
Why you're here tonight, Todd. Let me just be honest.
We spend too much time together anyway, an hour a week.
Oh.
I would think a lot of people that we work with and we know in recovery, Bill, could do this. Because a lot of times it's more about us than Jesus. Let's be honest. It is.
Well, you know, sometimes I think people dealing with narcissism have really got a lot going for them. And I'm realizing that's just not the truth. I mean, I know two homeless guys right now. They're just so self-obsessed. Everything is about them.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you realize you don't have a place to lay your head tonight? And you're living outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're right.
They are.
Yeah, they are.
See,
right.
you don't acknowledge that. They're right. Everybody
right.
else is wrong.
Yeah.
If somebody says, put it narcissism in a sentence, it's a grandiose know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're around somebody that's grandiose and thinks they have all the answers, oof, that's really when we're seeing narcissism pretty straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say not all narcissists are addicts. but all addicts have narcissistic traits.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
And a radio host is not a grandiose, but we are know-it-alls, so we've got that.
I'm not a know-it-all.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I'm learning a lot tonight.
Yeah, I am too. I just find the whole idea is to be such a fine line, because the people that are in recovery make everything about them. And we always say, I think you got to get a little bit outside your skin and start connecting with people. I remember reading a book by a psychologist. I think it was called The Lost Art of Listening. And it was kind of training as to how to listen. And I read the book, and it was very good. And then I would try to put it into practice, and it was exhausting.
Yeah.
It was so exhausting. But people would walk away going, oh, that was like one of the best conversations I've ever had with you. But it's because I didn't say anything. And you realize that you can't carry this on, that because you've got to, you know, sometimes the book is saying you oftentimes carry on parallel monologues. I'm not really talking to you. I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can start talking, kind of what George and I do on this show.
Right. So when the codependent is sitting out there right now saying, yeah, but Todd, if I say that to my spouse, or if I say that to my kid, or I say that to my parent, or I say that to my friend, it's not going to go well, that helps you realize that you're dealing with somebody that has a narcissistic trait. They're not creating a safe place to have a disagreement. You know, so it's okay to have a disagreement. It's okay to have an argument.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're helping them if you say, hey, you know, yesterday when we talked about this, that was really hard for me. You know, that would be my two cents to the codependents is, when we avoid the mess, we carry the mess. Have your voice. It's not about winning every fight. It's about, you know, moving the dependency to Jesus enough where you can live in that confidence. That's going to be okay. Even if you have a tough fight tonight, it's going to be okay, because now we're shifting a generational pattern.
Because who wants to set foot into the arena if the arena is not safe?
That's true. Fair enough.
So, but, I mean, you both have an obligation to have a safe place where you can step in and say, this is how I feel, and that's okay.
And I talk about four things for couples: speak without offending, listen without defending, agree to disagree sometimes, and then own your own part. So if it's a couple that's listening and one's more narcissistic, one's more codependent, try to practice non-offensive lead-outs, less defensiveness in the reaction, agree mm-hmm. to disagree sometimes.
Can you give me an example of a non-offensive?
Hey, my wife hurt my feelings yesterday. I say, hey, hon, yesterday when you said that, it kind of hurt my feelings, but how do you see it? That'd be non-offensive.
Okay.
I said, hey, I think you're a loser for saying that to me, and I hate you. You know, pretty offensive.
Yeah, let me write that down, because I'm having dinner with George later.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's really indicting here that we spent the first 50 minutes of our show talking about the narcissist, and now we've got to the codependent, so maybe we should have you back on that. But I think that's they do get neglected, don't they?
They do, and they're the ones that are carrying a lot of the water. But, boy, trust me that most of the time families change when the codependent gets honest. That's the truth. It's very rare that a narcissist says, hey, I think I'm a narcissist. Or the addict wakes up one day, I think I'm an addict.
We can be all of them, can't we?
Surely.
Okay. And so, it might be different in different relationships.
Well said.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, the parents out there confronting kids who are using is just horrifying for them, because the parents always feel like every time they bring it up, they're gonna have a very defensive child, and they know the truth, and the kid is in denial, and it's just causing incredible pain.
Absolutely. Yep. But, again, the honest conversation is a place to start. And we expect the defensiveness.
Yeah.
And when the parent comes from a place of confidence, love of Christ, then they'll expect the they'll get less defensive because they'll know the truth. Does that make sense? I talked to the parents about coming forward to that kid with that sense of, hey, you know their brokenness. You know that their addiction is a deep place of brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
So come from a place of mastery and confidence in Jesus enough to say, I get it. So when you get the defensive reaction, when you get the I hate yous, you stay in the game because you know the truth. The truth is that eventually they are going to have to turn their life over.
This sure. is very insightful for recovery. A lot of us get to the point in our recovery where it's not our acts of commission, but it's our acts of omission. And to work on that lately, for me, this is really a good thing. You know, what am I not doing for other people that I could be? Because it's just not on my radar. Mm-hmm. And I've got that from tonight. A lot of my thoughts are selfish. Even the good works, you know, are about what can I do for Meanwhile, I'm not willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, you know, be praying on this bill. I think we all should, to what would Jesus have us do? You know, let's add to that. We always talk about in our recovery, we need to make it a little bit better every day, you mm-hmm. know, and more better, and to, you know, keep working towards Christ. And this working for others, I guess, is a good trademark of what can we do for other people.
Yeah, Todd, you've been a great guest, and thank you for being on the show, and we'd love to have you back.
Thanks for having us.
We scratched the surface tonight just talking about narcissism, and we do want to talk about codependence. Todd Mullican, TODDMULLIKEN.com. You can go check him out. His book, The Dance of Narcissism and Codependency, coming out, I don't know, pretty soon. Anyway, that wraps up tonight's episode of Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us. Good night, everyone. Have a great week.